Good evening, this is Lehigh Valley Discourse, and you are listening to QLV. QLV, Queer Lehigh Valley, brings leading-edge conversations about LGBTQIA+ culture and community of the Lehigh Valley to WDIY listeners every month, including interviews with our neighbors, elected officials, and community leaders that will inspire acceptance and inclusion. I am your host, Justin Parker Fields, he, him, his pronouns, and I want to thank you for your support, as we know you could be anywhere doing anything right now, but we're glad you're here with us tonight. We balked at anti-trans legislation in Florida and Texas and never thought it would make its way to Pennsylvania. Or did we? Well, folks, it's here, and it has left a lot of people confused, angry, scared, and undecided on the topic of trans athletes in sports. We welcome back our friend to the show, Corinne Goodwin, Executive Director of the Eastern PA Trans Equity Project, who, along with others, is leading the charge in Harrisburg and locally to spread awareness and truth surrounding this topic. Corinne, thanks for joining us again tonight.
I'm glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
So let's unpack a few things here. We've seen legislation drawn up pertaining to all things LGBTQ, and not necessarily in a positive light. With the recent overturn of the Roe v. Wade decision, most are equating it to the Gateway overturn, with LGBTQ rights and voting rights not far behind. How did we get here?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I think that the answer really is that people on the right, Republicans in particular, they have been organizing to fight the battle on Roe specifically for decades, 50 years, really. Mm-hmm. And they have been extremely well organized, extremely well funded. And, you know, I think on the other hand, people on the other side, and that includes many LGBTQ folks, you know, once we won, for example, you know, the Obergefell ruling a few years ago around, you know, gay marriage, we sort of sat back and took a breath and go like, oh, we finally did it, and took our eyes off the ball. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's kind of number one, is that the people on the other side have never really given up, whereas, you know, the folks on our side have sort of backed off because we felt that we'd sort of won the battle or won the war, when it really has never ended. And then I think that the other thing to be thinking about is that on the right, there really is this confluence of interests, right? So you have people that, you know, it started back, you know, with Anita Bryant in the 70s, you know, trying on the evangelical right, who were anti-LGBTQ, rabidly so. And then what the establishment sort of mainline Republicans have figured out is that they need to activate that evangelical base of voters. Mm. And the two things that activated that base more than anything are abortion and LGBTQ rights. And so they keep pushing that button, so that they can get their base out. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why you've seen all of these anti-LGBTQ bills come out over this last year in particular, over 300 of them across the country, because it activates their base of voters. And they need that base to come out, because the truth is that there are more people on the left, but they're not as activated as voters as the folks on the right. So they just keep kind of pushing that button. Yeah.
And in the while, it kind of grays more of the line between separation of church and state, as we've been seeing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, you know, that's about pandering to the base so that they can get the rest of their agenda across the line, whether that is tax cuts or deregulation or, you know, deregulation for climate change or things like that. That allows them to get those things across the line if they give the evangelical base what they want on abortion and LGBTQ rights and other matters.
Wow. Now, HB 972, the Fairness in Women's Sports Act, which was legislation drawn up that would have banned transgender girls ages 5 and up from competing in school-sponsored sports programs. This was vetoed by Governor Wolf this month. Why is HB 972 an issue?
Well, so the first thing is that the people who sponsored the bill, Representative Blime, who is from Cumberland County, and some others, they had been unable to identify a single K through 12 transgender female student who is dominating sport anywhere in the state. So it gets back to why are they doing it, right? But the ultimate issue is that sports, school sports in particular, and if you look at the mission statements of the NCAA or the PIAA or the New Jersey Interscholastic Athletic Association, all of their mission statements talk about how school sports is there to effectively mold better citizens. And what happens is when young people go out for a team at school and participate, they learn how to play by the rules. They learn how to lose with dignity. They learn how to win with grace. They learn how to coach and, you know, help each other to achieve goals. And the impact of this legislation is that they are eliminating the ability of some of the most stigmatized young people in our country to participate and get the benefit of that sport.
Mm. And you mentioned something earlier about them not being able to find one single student. And I'm curious to see if they use the Leah Thomas case as an example to, you know, rally up the troops. But then on the other hand, if they're not able to find anybody locally, it's like, how does this stand ground?
Yeah, so that's exactly what happened, is that so this bill had been introduced over a year ago, if I have my memory correct, into the House. And by us and other organizations, you know, having good conversations with leaders on both sides of the aisle in Harrisburg, we essentially had the bill buried. And it's easy when you say that there's, you know, 300 plus anti-LGBTQ bills have been introduced in state legislatures, and you go like, oh my God, this is horrible. And, you know, Don't Say Gay passed in Florida, for example. But is that we've been able to beat back like 90% of these bills. And that's a victory, right? Yeah. It may not feel, you know, when the, you know, if one of these horrible bills was to get passed, it would be, you know, a horrible, horrible thing. But we don't talk about the, you know, 250 that we've managed to get, you know, stalled in the process or to not move forward or to be outright defeated. And the sports bill is an example of that. So we had that bill stuck in committee for over a year. It didn't move an inch until, you know, Leah Thomas won her victory. And not that we would ever tell, you know, her not to win a victory, but, you know, did a great job in her swim meet, and she won an NCAA title. And that kind of brought everything to a head. And that is the exact thing that they used in their hearings to talk about why it was unfair for cisgender girls and women to be competing against transgender girls and women. And the truth is that Leah Thomas, the race that she won, was the 11th slowest time over the last decade for a national meet. So a good day against a slow field. But, you know, she would have lost that race any time over the prior 10 years.
Wow. Now, there's mention in HB 972 that it created a mechanism for a right of private action against schools that fail to follow the law. What does that mean? Does that mean that schools can be sued or officials can be sued?
That's exactly right. So if had the bill gone forth, and of course it hasn't at this point, what it would do is it would force schools to create a system where transgender girls would not be allowed to compete within the gender that they identify with. So they would not be able to compete in female-designated sports. And if the school allowed a transgender student to compete, say a transgender girl student to compete on a girls' team, then parents, or anybody else for that matter, could sue the school district for financial damages. The other thing that, you know, we haven't talked about yet is that it also says, and this is the biggest problem with all of this anti-LGBTQ legislation, is that they're very vague. So what the bill basically said is that if a student, any student, is accused of being transgender, then the school has to do an investigation. Now, they didn't say what that investigation was, but the inference is that it could very well have been a biological investigation, right? So they would want that kid to be able to drop their pants and have a physical examination. And that puts not only transgender youth at risk, it puts cisgender youth at risk.
It does. That is so dangerous. Oh, my goodness. Well, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to QLV with our guest, Corinne Goodwin. When we come back, we will get into some of the most restrictive legislation in the United States, and it just passed in the PA Senate. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Psst! Did you know WDIY Public Affairs programs and features are available on all major podcast platforms? Listen anytime, on the go at Apple, Google, Spotify, or NPR One Podcast and Apps. Just search for WDIY 88.1 FM and you'll find a variety of award-winning public affairs programming from the Lehigh Valley. Listen and share with your friends and family where you get your podcasts and introduce them to Many Choices, Real Voices.
Welcome back to QLV. We are here with Corinne Goodwin, Executive Director of the Eastern PA Trans Equity Project. Now, let's get into SB 1277, Parental Control of Student Exposure to Sexually Explicit Content in Schools Act. This act requires parental notification and an opt-out provision to both instructional materials in classrooms and books in libraries that include references to sexual intercourse. It was also a means to eliminate LGBTQ-affirming books and instructional materials from classrooms and libraries. But it takes it a step further with language including contact with the person's clothed or unclothed genitals and sexual bestiality. What happens to a society that removes any reference of the LGBTQ community from libraries and instructional studies?
Yeah, so the bill actually even goes further, right? So the bill originally talked about any instructional materials or books in a library that included references to masturbation, sexual intercourse, bestiality, physical contact with a person's clothed or unclothed genitals, pubic area, buttocks, or breasts would require parental permission to be used. Prior to an amendment made by one of the state senators that also included specifically called out homosexuality. And the good news is that the Senate voted to remove the term homosexuality from it. But it still really gets to this issue of censorship. So it's a positive that the actual term was removed from the bill. But if the bill is still says that you can't talk about intercourse or you can't talk about, you know, what they would refer to as sodomy, right, or oral sex or anal sex or any, you know, they're still saying you can't talk about that stuff, right? So it's good that they removed the term homosexuality directly from the bill, but they're still targeting the same behavior. And it's important to realize that, you know, books like the Bible or the Diary of Anne Frank, they have discussions about sex and intercourse and physical contact, right? Mm-hmm. And the intent of this bill was specifically called out by Senator Mastriano, for example, was specifically really focused on LGBTQ community and LGBTQ issues. And they want that to be pulled from libraries and instructional materials. And that's still the intent of this bill. The problem is that if you're an LGBTQ youth, where do you learn about your sexuality? Where do you learn about gender? And they are forcing people to try to, frankly, to go out and learn on the street as opposed to from trained educators, right? So that's the first piece. Mm. The second piece is that it's completely hypocritical because if they are going to require parental permission for any types of books or materials to be used in school that talk about sexual intercourse or physical contact? How do you have discussions around heterosexual sex or cisgender issues? So these bills are so vaguely worded, and they are designed to target LGBTQ people in particular, but the fact is that they're much more broad. And the ultimate impact of this is that schools, again, because they could be sued if they violate this law, if it came into effect, would be that they're simply just going to pull all the books. They're simply going to remove any type of instructional materials that deal with sex and gender, whether LGBTQ or not.
And, you know, the last time that I even heard of anything like this, and I'm 38, and this is taken going back to maybe ninth grade in high school, it was fiction. We had to read a book called Fahrenheit 451. And in that book, you know, books were not allowed, you know, of a lot of different subjects. And they were, you know, they were burned, they were banned. There were, you know, legal stipulations if you were caught reading a book. And within, you know, this legislation, are there ramifications? Are there legal stipulations that people could get sued, people could be fined, people could be jailed eventually, since a lot of the language is vague?
That's exactly right. And so in order to, because the language is vague, the schools are going to err on the side of caution. Mm-hmm. And so instead of having a book, maybe The Diary of Anne Frank for that matter, right? Publicly available or easily available in a library, they will simply pull it because they don't want to have the risk of having to defend a suit in court and all the money and time and effort that goes into defending a lawsuit. So whether it is, you know, a children's book or a high school age book, they're just going to pull them all. And that means that students won't have access to information that they need to lead long and healthy lives and to be prepared for life after school.
And we always, you know, there's always this big uproar about censorship in other countries and other worlds. And when we see it happening here locally and the libraries, even at that, it's really scary.
Well, and the issue is that they are taking the initiative and power away from trained educators and, you know, giving it to the general public who maybe not won't have a complete understanding of how these materials are being used in school or why these materials are being used in school. It just really becomes a black and white issue. And, you know, we would certainly encourage, you know, all parents and all constituents within a school district to make sure that they are going to school board meetings and getting involved and learning about what was going on, as opposed to just, you know, creating this sort of like, you know, anything LGBTQ is bad or evil. You know, really try to have some understanding and get into conversations with the LGBTQ community so that they can learn why these types of things are important.
And Corinne, just to confirm, has SB 1277 been passed?
So SB 1277 has moved very, very quickly along with its companion bill, SB 1278, which we can also talk about. Move very, very quickly through the state Senate. So the way the legislative system works is that, you know, a bill is brought up for consideration. It then goes to committee where it is debated and potentially modified, and then it's voted out of committee, and then it has to be considered what the three separate times or have three separate votes by the full Senate. And this bill moved through all that process, which normally takes, you know, months and months and months. It moved at lightning speed. You know, within 60 days, it went from introduction to passage in the Senate, and now it's over on the House side, and it's in the Education Committee at the House.
Wow. Now, you mentioned SB 1278, Empowering Families in Education Act. Now, I'm not sure which is more scary, that this piece of legislation was drawn up or that it is more restrictive than Florida's Don't Say Gay law. What are some of the restrictions in place with SB 1278?
Yeah, so this really is, you know, SB 1277 is horrible. 1278 takes it to a whole nother level. And it really is the Pennsylvania version of the Don't Say Gay bill. So the first thing it would do is it would ban all classroom instruction involving sexual orientation or gender identity from pre-K through fifth grade. Now, the issue is that they don't define what instruction is. So, for example, if a kid comes back from Christmas break and the kid happens to have two moms or two dads, mm-hmm. and the teacher says, "So what did you do on Christmas break?" And the kid says, "Well, me and my moms went skiing." If another kid says, "Like, what do you mean you have two moms?" Will a teacher be allowed to discuss that in the classroom, or will they just avoid all those conversations? If the teacher is gay and has a photo of their spouse or partner on their desk, are they allowed to have a conversation when a kid says, "Who is that individual?" Right? So the first issue is that it doesn't define instruction. The next thing that it does is it prohibits classroom instruction involving sexual orientation or gender identity from 6th through 12th grades that isn't in accordance with quote-unquote state standards. Again, they haven't defined what state standards are.
Wow.
So these laws are very broad. It also bans teachers from portraying diversity in sexual orientation or gender identity in either a positive or a negative way at all grade levels. Now, what does neutrality mean, right? Mm-hmm. So does that mean that you're allowed to talk about heterosexual sex, but not LGBTQ sex, or is it you can't talk about either?
And it almost kind of seems like they're just trying to, I guess, impose that the LGBTQ community doesn't exist until kids are out of school. Or even, as you mentioned, the teacher, you know, who's gay and might have a picture of their partner on their desk. It's just, it's kind of like, don't ask, don't tell, but for schools.
Oh, absolutely. But it even gets worse because, historically, in many cases, young people, teens who are figuring out who they are from a gender or a sexuality standpoint, you know, they may often feel more comfortable coming out to a teacher or to a guidance counselor or participating in a gender and sexuality alliance club at a school prior to coming out to their parents at home. And matter of fact, many students live in homes that their parents are not affirming and would have real issues if they came out as LGBTQ.
And that's dangerous.
This bill would require the schools to out that student to their parents. Where currently, you know, the policy is that, you know, you can keep that confidential if the student asks to keep it confidential at school. And to give you a perfect example, so we ran into a situation, even though right now this is not law, in the Lehigh Valley here, where we had a student who called our organization to complain about issues that they were having at their school. And one of those issues is that the one of the school administrators called their parents and outed the kid as trans to their parents. And the parents threatened to throw the kid out on the street. The kid being, you know, 14, 15 years old.
And so it seems like, because you mentioned with these, I mean, this is wow, that's really sad to hear that personal story. With it going to the education committee, it seems like, you know, education is trying to hold the gay at bay. It's that, like, it seems like they're trying to, I guess, remove any LGBTQIA+ identity from the conversation. I mean, especially, you know, when you're talking about up to 12th grade, you know, if you're talking about seniors in high school, this is the next generation that's getting ready to go off into college or getting ready to go off and lead the world. And so do they think that these conversations aren't supposed to happen until they become adults or graduate 12th grade?
Well, and beyond that, what happens to that kid if they are unable to take advantage of services, guidance counseling services, for example, at that school, because they're afraid that they're going to be outed to family or to friends, right? There's mm-hmm. issues of bullying. There's issues of stigma. There's issues of depression. There's issues of suicidal ideation. And it just, you know, we are extremely worried about the future of LGBTQ youth at this point. And whether these bills ultimately get enacted or not, what the confluence of all these types of legislation has done is it has enabled teachers, administrators, other students to further bully and harass these young people.
Now, as much as, you know, I'd like to think that this is, or some would think, liken this to the Twilight Zone, it's definitely real life here in Pennsylvania and locally. And every one of us has an important role to play, you know, in the scheme of things. Corinne, what is your advice to our listeners out there who maybe don't agree with this legislation and they want to do something tangible about it? I mean, even those that, you know, maybe they don't necessarily have a transgender relative or child in their family, but, you know, want to act out and help.
Yeah, so I think that there's a few things that people can do. And the first one is to become educated, right? So make sure you really understand, you know, what the issues are. You know, it's easy to sort of assume that, you know, transgender youth are everywhere and they are, you know, taking over women's sports all across the state. And the truth is that that is not happening, right? Make sure that you understand that. Make sure that you understand what the issues are related to bathroom access and other, you know, equal protection issues, whether it's in education or housing or employment or other public accommodations. So make sure that you know the issues and become well-educated.
Oh,
the second thing to do is to become well-informed about the legislative process. So the ACLU, for example, has a bill tracker. The Pennsylvania State Legislature has a way that you can subscribe. It's one of the things that I do. You can subscribe to daily legislative updates. So, you know, I literally can keep track of these bills as they make their way through the legislature. Then, you know, the next part is that you inform other people about what's going on, make sure that they know what's happening, make sure that you talk to other parents or other allies in your area, and then make sure that you contact your lawmakers. So whether that is your local city or town council, your local school board, your state legislators, they need to hear from you. And you can either leave a message by voicemail or email, you know, within seconds. And then the last thing, I think, you know, a couple things probably is, you know, consider donating to the organizations that are fighting on behalf of LGBTQ youth. So whether that is our organization or the Bradbury Sullivan LGBTQ Center or Project Silicon Valley Youth House or the ACLU or the Pennsylvania Youth Congress, you know, we're all in this together and we are working every day, talking to legislators every day. But we need help to make sure that we're continuing to be able to do that work. And then, you know, finally, it's just, you know, if you know an LGBTQ youth, if you know a trans kid, let them know that you care. Let them know that you're supporting them. And let them know that there are organizations out here who are on their side and fighting for them and that can provide resources.
Thank you for that. Well, Corinne, I do want to thank you again for making time for us and to educate us on these urgent matters. You know, I wish I could have talked to you more about your amazing cooking or your adventures with your son in New York, but I did want to highlight the very important life-saving work that you're doing day in and day out. Are you able to provide us with the website information for the Eastern PA Trans Equity Project?
Yeah, so you can find us at www.patransequity.org. We're also on Facebook and Instagram. We regularly post updates on legislative issues or on, you know, the six ways you can fight anti-trans legislation. We happen to put that one out there this morning. So, you know, please reach out to us if you have questions, if you have concerns, if you are looking for an ally, if you're looking for a friend, or you're looking for resources.
Awesome. And as always, thank you again for all that you're doing for joining us tonight.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me back.
Now, usually I don't do this, but, you know, I like to play the role of host and get the opinions from those that we're interviewing. But I do want to just take 2 minutes to share my personal opinions on the topics of this episode tonight. I'm a 38-year-old gay black man, and I knew that I was gay when I was 3 years old. Now, I know that, you know, some might find that confusing and some might actually be able to relate to that. But it's my truth. And a lot of this legislation and stuff gearing towards children and trying to pretty much, in my opinion, erase LGBTQIA experience altogether, it's really scary. And it kind of, you know, it really pisses me off because if I had, you know, more support, or if there were conversations that I could relate to in school, I'd probably know how to communicate more effectively when I was younger, or not take me so long to identify with who I was, or take me so long to come out and just be comfortable with being me. You know, there was a mention that the phrase homosexuality was removed from the wording of legislation. And really, that's, I don't look at it as a win. I look at it as a distraction. You know, in this fight, as we've seen with Roe v. Wade and pretty much voting rights and interracial marriage, you have to fight every battle. You know, this is a war. And, you know, the win some, lose some battles, we have to win every battle on this. Because if not, our kids are at stake, our youth are at stake, our rights are at stake, as you've seen with Roe v. Wade. And it's not enough to just win some battles and try to fight another day. We have to fight every day. And so you have to, you know, be informed, like Karen said, be informed, know the legislative process. And if you don't know it, look it up online. ACLU, you can go to the Trans Equity Project. Google's a great resource. But flex your right to vote. And call your state and local representatives. You're the ones electing them to speak on your behalf. So if they're not speaking on your behalf, speak to them or find someone who will speak on your behalf. And with that said, I want to thank you, our listeners, all of our listeners, even outside of our LGBTQIA+ community, because this show isn't just inclusive for the LGBTQIA+ community. It's for all residents of the Lehigh Valley and beyond. If you're listening to WDIY, whether you're on our app or you're on podcast or you're online or listening to the radio, this is what's going to foster these conversations and bridge these gaps and help us find allies and have a conversation that's not just one-sided either on our end or your end. So, I thank you for listening, because you didn't have to, but you are. And that's the first step. So, I'm Justin Parker Fields. This is WDIY 88.1 FM. Tune in next Thursday for more Lehigh Valley Discourse, and we can't wait to have you back.